we really haven't heard that much from you since Tokyo. Is that by choice? Have you not been approached? What's that about?
Nicole, since I've had this job in 2018, I took it over in June of 2018. You are my fourth interview.
Wow.
That's it. No one ever asks to talk.
They don't ask.
Nope.
See, I find that so hard to believe.
They all talk about me, but they don't actually ask to talk with me.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of What Makes You Think, the show that flips the traditional interview format, showing you a unique and often funny side to some of your favorite figures in sports and entertainment. But don't worry, we get to some real stuff too. I'm your host, Nicole Langevin, and I just wanted to take a minute and talk to you guys. So I thought about moving forward with this episode without doing an intro like this, but I quickly came to the conclusion that that would actually be impossible for me. It would feel unsettling not to address the elephant in the room. So here we go. In this episode, I interviewed Tom Forster, the high performance coordinator for USA Gymnastics, an interview I was thrilled to book and eager to share with my audience. I excitedly released the teaser for this episode on all my social media platforms. Almost immediately after posting, I, for the first time in my career, received aggressive pushback about the legitimacy of my knowledge of gymnastics and my level of professionalism in businesses that I've built from the ground up in the gymnastics community. So I wanted to quickly respond to these questions and let you know a little bit about me and my experience in the gymnastics world. Hi, I'm Nicole Langevin. And after retiring from the sport as a level 10 athlete as a result of a career-ending injury, spent the last 25 years in the gymnastics industry as a coach, choreographer, judge, speaker, and consultant. And because I love this sport so much, I've made it a personal mission to dive into as many aspects of it as I possibly can. For example, becoming a level 10 rated judge has allowed me to stay connected to so many gymnasts at the grassroots level, and judging is truly one of my favorite things to do. So much so that I founded My Gym Judge, which I now co-own with Chelsea Memo. We provide online feedback, run workshops, all to help athletes and coaches improve scoring potential. Most importantly, we're able to open the door to communication so that we can all work together to help athletes reach their competitive goals. I also co-own Like a Champ with my partner, Alicia Sacramone. We represent freelance gymnastics professionals and place them in positions like temp coaching or camp clinician roles. And my first baby is Precision Choreography, sometimes known as Precision Choreo in camps. I'm proud to say that this once idea has become my livelihood and the catalyst to countless endeavors to follow. Through Precision, I and my amazing team provide choreography workshops and training camps all over the country. And because of Hori Gabishian, I am able to call myself an Olympic choreographer, an honor I cannot thank her for enough. I was also fortunate enough to choreograph Chelsea's comeback floor routine. Hopefully, we will get to see it on the competitive stage. And one of my passions is coaches education. And because of this, I find great joy in speaking at different coaches education events in the US and Canada, something I've been doing for well over a decade. I'm also a wife to an incredibly supportive husband and mom to a 4-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son. So yeah, I'm busy. With all of this, one thing I have never been is an employee of USA Gymnastics, nor do I aim to be. I did not contact USAG to get this interview, nor did I have any interaction with the organization prior to, during, or after this interview. To be clear, like most coaches, judges, meet directors, and club owners, I do maintain a professional membership with USAG in order to connect with athletes and coaches around the country. They are one of many organizations I interact with. For example, yes, I have spoken at multiple USAG congresses, but I have also spoken at many Canadian provincial congresses. I've spoken at Inside Gymnastics GymCon. One of my faves that I speak at regularly is the Gymnastics Association of Texas. Another thing that I am not is an investigative journalist, nor have I ever wanted to approach my interviews from that standpoint. There are other platforms out there that do those investigations very well. This podcast has been my newest endeavor in my entrepreneurial journey, and it has quickly become my passion. I love talking to people and asking the questions that are interesting to the gymnastics community, but also the questions that are just in my heart. I'm always trying to find the personality behind the persona. I think that I've created a space that my guests feel comfortable and confident to show and share their true selves without judgment. After that, it's up to the audience to decide how they feel. My efforts in this interview were to ask the questions I had pressing on my mind and to give Tom the space and time to answer them in a long-form interview without interruption. Is there more I want to know? Yep. I know I could have pushed, but I chose to stay in my lane. At first, I was really uncomfortable with the social media backlash. I thought about not airing this episode at all. I let the comments question my legitimacy and professionalism in the world of gymnastics. My feelings got hurt for a minute. It made me question everything I've done to get here. But I knew better, and I kept thinking if this were someone else, I would know exactly what to say. But it's hard when it's yourself. Thankfully, I'm surrounded by amazing people who reminded me of what in my heart of hearts I already knew. I am highly trained and respected in my business. I got this interview and many other long shots. You can scroll back and see the list of guests I've had thus far because I asked. I was just as surprised as many of you that the answer was yes. I always consider the sport I love so much first when speaking to my guests, and I'm lucky enough to end every interview thus far with new insight. Lastly, I originally was going to do this as a two-part episode, but have since gone back to the single episode format for this one. Thank you for taking the time to listen to today's episode. And please, if you have any questions, you can always reach me directly on Instagram and Facebook at Nicole Langevin Consultant. So here we go. All right. Tom Forster, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate it. This is quite an honor. I've been listening to some of your podcasts. This is going to be fun, I think. I don't know.
Oh, well, I'm glad you listened and you still came on to join me.
Have we met, by the way? You look so familiar. And I've been looking at your website and I'm thinking, we have met, I think, but I cannot remember.
Well, the funny thing is we did meet in person one time and it was on the bus at US Championships when it was in either Hartford or Providence. It was pretty soon after you got your new gig.
Oh, yeah.
And I talked you through the crack of the seats for a minute.
You look so familiar, and I know I've seen you. I just can't remember meeting you. I apologize.
Oh, no problem at all. I speak at a lot of the congresses, so we've definitely, crossed paths there.
Okay.
But as far as conversation, it was that one bus ride where I was auxiliary judge, and because, I'm never going to be any more than that since I wasn't on the national team. I can't ever be a brevet judge, but that's a conversation for another podcast. But I was auxiliary judge there, and I actually had found out that I am allergic to bees a day before that meet. My arm blew up about this big. At the meet, I had to go see your medical staff and get antibiotics, and they told me to go to the emergency room, and I said no, because I have just been assigned to be the beam timer for warmups, which means, that means you're up on the podium. And yeah. I said, I'm about to be the closest I will ever be to Simone's gymnastics in my life. If I have to squeeze my sausage arm into this blue jacket, I'm going to do it. And I did it. And you can see the pictures of my arm just.
Wow.
With the stopwatch. Yeah, that was pretty great. So, but I own Precision Choreography. I co-own my gym judge with Chelsea Memel. So we're business partners. I choreographed her comeback routine. I don't know if you ever got a chance to see it.
Never did.
My husband did the music. And then I also co-own Like a Champ with Alicia Sacrimony. So what we do is representation for freelance gymnastics professionals. So we place.
Cool.
Temp coaches and clinicians at camps and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm cool. Maybe we've seen each other, but I always assume you're very busy. I never actually approached you until you had to talk to me because I was right there. So as you probably know now, then I like to warm up my guests in a different type of way. So yeah. I've got a quick warm up for you and then we will jump into the interview. So I think this is a pretty easy one. Here's the scenario. There is a world where social media can only be used for positivity. The possibility of that world existing rides solely on your shoulders. And what you need to do to make that happen is completely nail a karaoke performance. What is the song?
I can't sing, so.
That's the best part.
So I would have to know all the words without.
The words are on the screen. And presentation's half the party. So don't worry about vocal quality. Is this the hardest interview question you've ever been faced with?
I'm going to go with the James Taylor song, Sweet Baby James.
Ah, there we go.
Because I used to play that on guitar, so.
All right. Well, the nice thing about James Taylor is you don't really have to sing. You can kind of talk your way through it.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
So, Tom, you've had a pretty uneventful year, right?
Yeah, it's been real calm. Okay, no, wait. I got to back up. I sarcasm is my favorite, and I got really trashed after one World Championships by an interview because I did sarcasm, and it just bombed horribly. So I promised myself I won't do sarcasm anymore. But it really hurts, Nicole, because that's kind of my go-to, release. I've had an eventful year.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I know the interview that you're talking about.
Yeah, that just backfired really badly. I was trying to be funny and trying to be, lighthearted and woo.
So if you could have done that again, would you have prefaced it or would you have just completely changed your response style?
I would have changed my response style for sure. Yeah. Do I have to change with you or can I be myself?
You be yourself, absolutely. One of the things that I really love to do here is give people the opportunity to provide context in situations where maybe in the past they weren't able to, or just in this situation that we're in completely. So I appreciate that you said that and brought that up. And I'm sure there's people that are going to appreciate hearing you bringing that up too. So that's the first time. And that brings me to, we really haven't heard that much from you since Tokyo. Is that by choice? Have you not been approached?
Nicole, since I've had this job in 2018, I took it over in June of 2018. You are my fourth interview.
Wow.
That's it. No one ever asked to talk.
They don't ask.
Nope.
I find that so hard to believe.
They all talk about me, but they don't actually ask to talk with me.
Oh, okay. All right. So you're kind of like the hot girl at the party that everybody just assumes everybody's already asked out, so then nobody does.
Oh, you think? Wow, what a compliment. Okay, I'm going to take it as that. But yeah, it was a lot went on in Tokyo and literally not one journalist or anybody reached out to ask what happened. Not one.
Wow. And have you been sitting on a lot? Have you feel like you have wanted to get stuff out, or has it been kind of nice to be able to marinate in the last year?
Yeah, I've been wanting to get stuff out because I seeing there's a lot of untruth that happened. Mm-hmm. Or that was talked about.
Yeah. So when you took this job, was that you stepping in and feeling like you could get things on the right track? Or did you feel like you were volunteered for this position because of how well things were going, the developmental side, and how people were seeing the qualities in you that they believed were what we needed? Did you feel like you were kind of appeasing people by taking the job, or was that you saying, I want to do this?
I was asked to apply for the job by the coaches, the day that Rhonda Fang was let go, but happened at one of the national team camps. So all the, national team coaches were together. And I guess they all kind of discussed who they wanted to replace, who to be in the leadership role. And I got a phone call from Steve Rybacki and asked if I would apply, and said that the coaches had come up with, they had said that you were their number one choice. And I originally said no. And it was after my wife said, well, it's a leadership role. It's not a coaching role. It's a leadership role. So I went ahead and thought, well, I'll apply. And I'm not going to politic for it. So I'm not going to go ask people for their support. If I get an interview, I'll be honest. And if I don't get it, then it's great. God's will. I don't get it. Perfect. Oh, I'll move on and do a lot more fly fishing. But I got it. And I must admit, the interviews were bad. They were not good.
On your end?
Yeah, I don't think they went very well. Carrie Perry and I were not on the same page at all. And so when she called and said I got the job, I was very, very surprised. I even asked her, I said, you were there, right? I mean, that wasn't a good interview. And she goes, no, I think it went really well. It's like, wow. Okay.
You wouldn't have hired yourself based on if you isolated those interviews, it sounds like.
Well, based on, we were on totally different pages as to what the responsibilities of athletes and coaches are. Mm-hmm. Completely different pages. And this is a time when they're trying to rebuild and you know, change the culture and et cetera. Right. We were not on the same page, that's for sure. Yeah. In that case, I wouldn't have hired me for that if this person was so different than what I wanted. But it happened.
I don't think that being on a different page than Carrie Perry is necessarily a bad thing.
Clearly it was not a bad thing.
So when you took this job though, did you feel like this was going to be something for the long haul, or did you feel like?
No, I thought it was temporary. Yeah. I was, every indication was, I was even asked, do it temporarily until Valeri Lukin, wanted it back. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this whole Olympics then was quite the ride. I have a question for you, and I just thought of it this morning. Could you tell me, what did you say to Suni after she won and you hugged her? What was that conversation?
As I recall, I've known her and Jess and Allie since she was, I think, 11 or 12 in the development camps. And I think I recall asking her, say, who would have thought back then that this would have happened,
Yeah.
And it was very emotional.
Nice.
Really emotional. It was fun.
Yeah, that was quite the ride. So Everything leading up to that, this, you're stepping in at a time where this isn't a bunch of little kids that are on this team. And that needs to be taken into consideration. So what approach changed for you knowing that these are actual adults that are on this team and they need a different approach? Did it change what you thought maybe this role would have been 20 years ago when it was mostly kids?
Yes. In large part, one of my, my goals was trying to, the hope is that when these athletes are done, that they can reflect later and say, hey, it was hard, but it was worth it. And I enjoyed I enjoyed the ride for the most part. And I was valued. I was appreciated for my efforts. And if they can say that, then I feel that, the program's been successful. And clearly, past athletes have said that's not how they felt. And so every decision that I make, I've had that in the back of my mind is, how will this be perceived later? Because the athletes today are the coaches and judges, et cetera, of our future. I mean, so how they feel about what's going on, it's really, really important. Not just for now, but for will they contribute back? Will they give back to our sport? And a lot of that will come from how they were treated, and how they felt they were treated. And so every decision I make is kind of been based on considering that and trying to balance excellence and trying to win medals, get America in the position to be the very best that we can be. Mm-hmm. But to do that, as these athletes in their 20s, they had to have a voice. They had to be able to not just always be told what to do, but felt like they had a decision in things. Mm-hmm. So that was, and balancing that, Nicole, with coaches who are very controlling, because that's one of the things that makes them good, and that's what they're used to. That's what's given them success in the past. And that challenges that mindset. So it's a conflict. There was a lot of criticism behind the scenes, not directly to my face, mm-hmm. except a couple times, but a lot of behind the scenes criticism. But I feel like I've done what I can to lead gymnastics through its darkest period, and I've done it the best that I could. Mm-hmm. It's funny because at the first Worlds that I was with Simone, that was in Doha in 2018, and she fell in, I think, beam finals. I think she fell in beam finals. Didn't have a good, it wasn't a good beam final, I think, for her. Or maybe it was all around finals. I can't remember. But anyway, we're in the back. And I said, well, you know, darn, you know, wasn't great, but, you know, just keep plugging away, something to that effect. And I heard her say to another athlete, wow, if that was Marta, you know, yes, let me have it. And I overheard her say that. And I went to her and I said, well, did you intentionally fall? I mean, did you fall on purpose? No. You know, did you try your best? You're human. It happens.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing. They don't get, and when I say they, I mean these top athletes, they don't get to where they are because somebody made them want it.
No.
They wouldn't have gotten there. And so
you're exactly correct.
You're dealing with these many, we say type A personalities, whatever you want to call it, perfectionist personalities, whatever. We're dealing with that when we get these athletes that are going to get to that level. So everybody else's job around them is to hone that and balance it out. Otherwise, yeah, you may get some great results in gymnastics, but like you said, after the fact, there's nothing left. There's nothing
exactly
left.
Yeah.
Now, how do you feel about, and obviously this has nothing to do with you and what you've done because we haven't seen the post-gymnastics results of you being in charge. But prior to that, there's been a lot of talk of athletes coming out of the system and feeling like USAG was just kind of done with them. They didn't feel supported. They didn't feel like they were given the opportunity to hone any other life skills. I actually interviewed an NFL kicker the other day who said, he said the same thing. He just wrote a book called The Point After, and it's about his life after the NFL and feeling like, what the hell to do?
What a great title.
Isn't that great? So, you know, he was talking about in college, they had all these resources to help the whole person athlete.
Yeah.
But once he got in the NFL, that wasn't there anymore. It was just pound, pound, pound. So that was eye-opening to say, okay, this is a common thing for top-tier athletes. But how do you feel? Is that something that is even in your wheelhouse of what you do on a daily basis? Is it in the discussion of health?
It is in the discussion. And the challenge is how to implement it. Mm-hmm. It's been a source of frustration for me to try to implement change in some way because there's such, you know, for 16, 17 years, there's been a process of what happens at the national team camps. And that is you train for 4 hours in the morning, they have lunch, they go rest for 4 hours.
Lunch.
The food's good now, by the way. And there's no restrictions. They do whatever they want. And then they rest for 4 hours. And then we come back and we do another 3 hour training in the evening. And then they have dinner and then they get their therapies and they have to rest. If you impose some kind of training on them, which I've suggested, hey, could we do something like, you know, after lunch, mental train, whatever. Oh, no, they have to rest. So it just, everything gets shut down. So now it's imposed. Anything we do has to be when it's not at camp, which now they're on their own. You know, now it's during their gym time and they got to figure that out whenever they're at their home gyms. And it's just been a really, it's been a source of difficulty trying to get them to embrace change.
Right. Now, do you think that is a cost thing by any chance?
No.
You don't?
No. No, it has nothing to do with money. No. No, it's how to implement it and to get them to actually do it. There's resources, you know, that are free through the USOPC. And we tell them about it. You know, the coaches know about it. And I guess, you know, we've got to just keep kind of promoting that, but can't make them do it.
Hey, I had that conversation with my six-year-old son the other day when he wanted to help his four-year-old sister. I said, all you can do is offer help. You can't make somebody do it. You're going to need to know that lesson your whole life, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. With what I do, I've always done this. I've been doing my gymnastics businesses since about 2007 officially. And most of my staff, as you probably saw, if you went on the website, are you know, former very successful athletes, whether they were national team, Olympians, world team members, or world champions. And I have said since day one, when Alicia Sacramone was the first person I brought on, and I saw this in her, and I've seen it 99% of the time with athletes at that level, that they do what they say they're going to do. They're goal-oriented, they're determined, they're hardworking, they're persistent, and they can solve problems. And what more do you want as an employer than those qualities? So I've always said, your time on the national team, to me, is a master's degree. Because most of you couldn't go do that. You were too busy. So I'm going to read that time in your life as you getting your master's. And it's worked. It's worked time and time again. But there still is that sense of, you know, I wish more people were able to see that. But our gymnastics world is so small that somebody that runs a, you know, Fortune 500 isn't going to know what it means that they were on the national team and decide to, you know, give them a break.
Yeah.
So since this role, you're not actually in the gym being the technician as much as you used to be. Is that safe to say?
Yes.
Do you miss that?
Horribly.
Do you?
Horribly, yeah.
So how much of that can you do at national team camps?
I think I can do a little more now since the athletes are younger. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm a little more closer to these athletes that have come up out of the development camp. But the previous group, you know, they were older, and there's a number of them that I didn't know because they didn't come to development camps. Leanne Wong, Kara Aker, Grace McCallum. And then, you know, Simone was in a development camp very briefly. Mm-hmm. And then she made national team. So I only think I worked with her and her coaches twice on bars, I think. And she did not like bars, but her coach really liked bars. But, you know, Jordan Childs and Suni and, you know, I knew them since they were little. But, you know, their experience and their coaches are super experienced. So there wasn't a lot for me to do. And it's a fine line of trying not to interfere, speak, you know, when you're asked. Interject things if you really see something that you think can help. Mm-hmm. But a lot of, you know, especially as experienced as the Olympic team was, you know, the coaches, they don't need help. They're doing a good job.
And with that role that you have, I mean, and I think personally, some of the issues with perhaps the, you know, the social media responses that aren't the most positive, I would think I just go back into business mode and go, okay, I'd try to take a few steps back and what's the root of the problem. I'm wondering if the job description that you have is misinterpreted to the gymnastics public.
Oh, maybe.
So could you maybe describe exactly what your role is and maybe even what it isn't?
Well, I'll clear up one thing. For sure, right off the bat, is the high performance director is one vote on a committee of three people that called the athlete selection committee that determines at a competition, you know, who goes, who makes a team and who doesn't, mm-hmm. based on whatever the requirements are in advance. So it's written that, like, for example, in the Olympics, it was the top all arounder, you know, wins, top two. And then the other two could be picked based on team needs. And so if you go out of rank order, everybody, you know, either blames the director or accredits the director. But I'm not the head of the committee. There is no head of that committee. And the two other people on the committee is an athlete representative and Tatiana Praskaya, who has been selected by the coaches themselves to be on that committee. And she's been on the committee for years and years and years and years, longer than me. So it's a committee decision to finalize those kinds of positions. So it isn't something that the high performance director decides solely, but that's what the media always portrays. Oh, Tom has a tough decision. No, Tom's one decision out of three. It isn't my decision. Mm-hmm. So that's a misnomer. Then the other thing is basically I coordinate the schedule for when the camps will be, what the goals are, the objectives at each of the camps, determining which competitions that we're going to go to. Mm-hmm. And basically, I have to try to see the forest through the trees, right? When you're a coach and you're seeing your athlete day after day after day, sometimes you just miss things because you see things. So you don't see certain things because you see it so often. And that's kind of the job, is to be able to see, you know, what things need to be fixed and what things need to be paid attention to, and to have some kind of vision for the future, is to say, well, where's the sport going? Because the coaches are focused in the moment right now with their athlete. That's what they're paid to do by their athlete, and that's their job, and they're doing a fabulous job of it. My job is to also think about the future. Where's the sport going, and how do we stay up with it? How mm-hmm. do we, what trends are happening? And then communicate those things to make sure that we're staying on the right track.
Mm-hmm. So based on what happened at the Olympics with Jade and Suni changing their routines for finals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that in any way affect maybe moving forward that there are different judges that can give feedback prior to a major competition like that to maybe catch what was caught in prelims?
Yeah, but it was a perfect storm, just so you know. So, you know, typically what the plan was is we would have sent teams to Gymnex in Canada. We would have gone to World Cup events. We would have gone to Jesolo in Italy. And we would have, our athletes would have been seen by other international judges. And we would have been getting a pulse as to where our artistic scores were and our execution. And we didn't get any of that. We got zero of that. And so, you know, when Jordan Childs is scoring a 57 in the all around, you can't keep her off the team, right? Mm-hmm. You can't keep her off the team. But what we discovered was the routines that kind of look like college routines that are very, very popular in this country, they're not popular internationally. And had we seen those routines, the results of those kinds of scores in international meets prior to the Olympics, we would have known, okay, we got to make, you know, some changes possibly, mm-hmm. but we didn't know because we weren't getting that information. So in that case, it wouldn't have mattered this particular year, the circumstances being what they were, it wouldn't have mattered who the judges were.
Right. Yeah. You had no gauge. I'm glad that you pointed that out, because that does make a lot of sense. How are you to know the international judges' responses if you're not in front of the international judges?
Yeah. We only saw them literally. And just so you know, I do a lot of reports. I love statistics and so forth. So I did a lot of reports, gave them out to the coaches, and it showed I'll give you an example. In 2019, we won the world championships, obviously, and we had the highest D score. We've always had the highest D score on floor. And we had the second highest E score on floor. On that team, of course, you know, it's Simone Biles, Suni Lee, Grace McCallum, Jade Carey. Those were the four, right? Just so happened those four were in the Olympics as well. But Jade's score would not be part of the team, right? But Grace, Suni, Simone, mm-hmm. out of the 12 team at the Olympics, we did not have a fall, by the way. We took 11th in E score. We went from second in the world to 11th. And we're wondering why. What happened? What did we do different that all of a sudden our scores were so much lower and everybody else's went up a little bit? Seems a little suspect to me, but it was just, you know, we did, again, no international meets prior to the Olympics. We had no indication that we were not on track, because we certainly weren't worse than we were in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So you said there's a group of three of you, a committee of three that choose the team. Prior to trials, though, and prior to the final selection, did you already decide as a group you're going rank order? This show is brought to you by Creatively Disruptive, the marketing team behind your team. You've heard me talk about them before, and I'm going to keep doing it because they're amazing. Check them out at creativelydisruptive.com. They can help your gym increase revenue, increase numbers, and help you understand the steps it took to get there so that you can continue to progress. This episode is also brought to you by Precision Choreography's Artistry Academy. Artistry Academy will be held in two ways this winter. 1 week will be dedicated for first-time students who want to spend time honing their artistry, learning how to perform, reducing deductions in their floor and beam routines, and overall getting a brand new experience to help improve their scoring potential. These classes meet virtually 3 times during the last week of December, and each class is 90 minutes, led by a world-class choreographer, and the class content has been devised by top-rated judges and world-class choreographers. We are also offering Artistry Academy Workshop, which is a one-day workshop offered to any athlete who has completed either the first or second level of Artistry Academy. This workshop is 1 day, 90 minutes, and athletes will have the opportunity to create their own performance piece based on the components that they learned in either the first or second level. You can learn about Artistry Academy or register today by going to precisionchoreo.com/registration. But wait, there's a deal. Black Friday is coming up and Artistry Academy prices are going to be slashed. So get over to precisionchoreo.com/registration and get your spot for either Artistry Academy first level or Artistry Academy workshop. This episode is also brought to you by the Starlight Invitational hosted by the MGC Mastars. Starlight Invitational is an incredibly run, I'm talking well-oiled machine, competition held at Babson College in Boston. It's for levels 3 through 10, as well as all Excel levels. It's in a brand new facility. It's got great awards, great hospitality, and in a really cool location. If you are interested in registering for this competition, which you should be because it's amazing, please do so ASAP because it does tend to fill. And especially this year, they expect it to fill very quickly. So check the show notes and you'll find a direct link to the Starlight Invitational. And now back to the show. Prior to trials, though, and prior to the final selection, did you already decide as a group you're going rank order? Or did you look at who was in the rank order and say, yeah, that makes sense?
No, we do a series of things trying to calculate what's the highest team score. Mm-hmm. And again, and being on the outside before 2018 and watching what Marta had done, et cetera. I remember watching in 2016, how the team was selected, and all indications were that the team wasn't going to be beat because they were winning by points. Now, we were in the same exact situation this particular Olympics. We were beating teams in 2018 and 2019 by 6 points. So there's no indication that every tenth matters at this stage with Simone in the meet, right? Because she adds 2 points to the next kid. And watching it from the outside in Rio and Marta making and the committee making the decision to, move Gabby Douglas onto the team and bumping people out. And I can look at it and say, well, they wanted her bar score, but the difference would have been 0.2. Now, the potential for a medal because she could get into finals. Yeah, that there's the potential for a medal for sure. But you pull somebody out of the Olympics who earned it from the Olympic trials. They don't get to go now because you want 2 more 10ths and you want the potential for a medal on bars. And that was really the only reason that Gabby would be on the team, statistically looking at it. And I don't know all of it, but that's what it looks like to us on the outside. And it left a really, really bad taste in the community. It didn't have a good feel in the community. And then there's a lot of athletes, that they came out over the next few years talking about how they've been made to feel. And I just thought, man, on my watch, I don't really want that. I don't really see bumping out somebody for a tenth or two. Now, if it's a half a point, maybe we got to, discuss that. But if it's over 2 tenths, then we're, I don't, I, that was my view among the 3-person committee. And so looking at the numbers, it just didn't make sense to go out of rank order. Michaela would have made a difference at like 0.1 based on something, I can't remember exactly, floor or whatever, but we were also already really strong on vault. On her strong events, we were already strong. And So it seemed appropriate to go ahead and keep it rank order based on the needs of the team. And I still feel that way. And had we, of course, no one knew that Simone would get the twisties and not be able to compete. And I just find it ironic that people, you know, make some of the comments that they did. To me, that's like saying, well, if we knew that he was going to fumble, we wouldn't have put him, we wouldn't have run the play. Well, of course, in hindsight, you can say that in any sport, but we don't have that benefit. So we clearly believed that Simone was going to be, you know, a 60 plus all-arounder on that day, 59 maybe. And that would have changed things for sure, but it didn't happen. And I would like to talk about that at some point, because I'm really, really grateful for what she did. Mm-hmm. Because it's, we were really close to getting no medal whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So no, we did not make a decision beforehand as to that we would go rank order. Although I do think it's fair to assume, and I think the whole gymnastics community should assume, that should be considered first, because it is a competition. When Michael Phelps shows up, and he has, you know, he's the greatest of all time, but if he doesn't get the fastest time, they're not going to say, well, you know, 2 years ago, he was really good. No, his time wasn't fast today. And no one seems to mention that in other sports, but they really criticize this sport for that.
What do you say then, though, because this used to be an all-arounders game, and it's not anymore. So what do you say to the event specialists when we're talking about choosing a team by rank order?
Well, you have to look at how many people can you put on a team, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, I wish it was all team, but this case, with only four girls on the team, then that means, let's just say somebody got hurt, then you're down on one event because that person can't help. That's a problem. I mean, that's like going into the football game and we don't have our kicker. Well, we'll never have to punt during the game, so we're going to be okay. No, you won't be, probably, right? Yep. You can't afford to do that. And it's the same thing for us in that particular case. Now, it won't be in the next Olympics. It'll be back like it was in Rio. So we'll be able to have five people on a team, and you'd be able to do that. You'd be able to kind of
play the game a little bit.
Do the puzzle piece, which will be fun.
Yeah, it is kind of fun. I mean, all of us gymnastics fans spend 3.5 years doing that prior to every Olympics. Yeah. But so that makes sense. With the team of four, you need four all-arounders. What about for that extra spot? Obviously, Jade got hers on her own, but that other individual spot, the argument is, wouldn't have it made more sense to give that to a bars beam specialist?
Yeah, actually, our first goal was, no, not beam, because we didn't have one stand out. Kara Aker probably would have been the strongest considerant, but her performances in 2021 were not really indicative of somebody that's a concrete shot at a medal. Riley McCusker on bars absolutely was. Now, the most objective events obviously are vault first, then bars, then floor, beam and floor. You know, they were the most subjective. And we didn't anticipate vault because you have Simone and you have Jade Carey, right? So why would you need a vaulter? So that was not on our radar at all. And then, so we'd gone in I was really hoping Riley would have been healthy for the all around, because I saw her earlier in the year and she looked flat out amazing. And with her artistry, I mean, I just thought, man, this is going to be perfect. Yeah. With her artistry on beam and floor, her bars, this is going to be, I think she's going to make the team. And then she had that unfortunate injury, and it turned out to be pretty significant. It was a bad ankle injury. And but she was a candidate for bars. And we had really thought, well, if she finishes in the top two on bars, then she's in. You know, we're going to take her. And then she had the fall. And so we ended up going with Michaela, in the sense that if something were to happen on vault, Michaela, we were absolutely convinced, would make finals. And we were absolutely convinced she will get a medal. It seemed the most guaranteed. And we were right.
Okay. All right.
Well, I feel that. I mean, I really you know, we actually anticipated Riley to be on Bars, yeah, or Carib to be on Beam, or, I mean, it, only because, you know, like the rest of the world, when you have Simone and Jade, you're just not thinking of another Balter. But, you know, looking back at the videos, if you watch Michaela Skinner's vaults, I mean, they got better and better. Oh, her form got better, and she was doing them effortlessly. I mean, just doing them so easily, consistently, and in training camps as well, not just what you saw on TV.
And with two hands.
Yeah, both hands hitting the ball, feet together. I'm just like, yeah, she worked really, really hard.
Yeah, she did.
And yeah, so I absolutely know this kid's a medal for sure. So.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that too, because I, you know, unfortunately can't do that every single day and appease everybody's curiosity. So I appreciate you doing that today. So yes, let's go to Tokyo and the twisties. And first question I have, and then I'll just let you talk if you have a plan of what you want to talk about. But my initial question is just, were you even in the conversation to make the decision, or was that 100% Simone?
That was 100% Simone. Absolutely. Yeah.
The analogy I came up with was, if you're, because it's so freaking frustrating to hear people not get it outside of the sport. And I just say, if you're on an airplane and that pilot got struck with sudden blindness, are you going to ask him to keep flying? No, you know, move over and give the co-pilot the head seat. And that's what she did.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think a credit to the whole culture change is she felt comfortable enough to do that. And her coaches didn't try to talk her out of it. And I don't, you know, she certainly didn't hesitate to feel like, oh, I wonder what Tom's going to think. She just made the decision, and it was the right decision. Absolutely. It was the right decision. So do you want me to talk about that?
If you're comfortable, I would love that. Yeah.
So the whole story is, after the team qualification round, and we were in second place, because she basically had a bad meet. Simone had a bad team qualification and still made finals in every event. I think she made finals in every event and only scored a 57 something. So she's still the number one all around score in the world.
Right.
And Suni, I think, is right behind her. And that was her bad event, right? I mean, it was a bad meet for her. So she's frustrated. But she's still finaled in every event. So we take the next morning off, basically, because they just had a meet. The next evening, we have a short training. And to save their legs, we just do Bars and Beam is what we do. But we had done very little, so... And she goes to Bars, everything's fine. And, you know, she dismounts with a double twisting double back and all that went fine. She goes to Beam, she dismounts with a full enough beam and all that went fine. And they decided, the group decided, let's do a little bit of tumbling before we go back to the hotel. So they do, and she bails out of a full in and does basically an Arabian double front to her butt. And we all kind of, you know, everybody kind of, no one gasped, but it was like, ooh, that, never seen her do that before. And she looked very shocked and surprised and immediately walked over to her coaches, and they, you know, said something to her. And she went back, tried again, bailed out again. And I just thought, uh-oh, you know, this is a problem. And you can see the anxiety, you know, that they're having about it. And, you know, I don't want to add to it. I mean, they're already feeling the stress. But a really cool thing is Sarah Jancy, Grace McCallum's coach, came over to me and said, hey, you know, she could do her front full through to a double layout and not have to do the full in. And I'm like, that is a great idea. And it actually raises her start value by a tenth. And I was thinking, this is going to be a great Olympic story. We're going to end up winning by, like, this is the difference. And Sarah Jancy's really going to be the hero. This is good. What a great Olympic story is about to happen. I'm like, tell them.
That's good reality TV.
That would have been. And I'm like, go tell them. Go. So she goes and tells them. So the next morning, they do training, and she warms up front full through to a double layout perfectly. I'm like, wow. What athlete can just, oh my gosh, just, yeah. And she's all smiles like, yeah, that pass is going to work. It's great. So we're fine. Everything's good. We go into the, so the public probably doesn't know this, but there's two gyms set up. There's a gym set up with all the equipment and all the teams warm up there. And when you're done, you line up, they march you into the Olympic Games and you go to your first event. Okay. So we're in the warm-up gym. And we have to start our warm up on bars. We're going to finish on vault because vault is our first competitive event, right? Mm-hmm. So we start on bars and she does her double twisting, double back up bars and everything is fine.
Okay.
She goes to beam and she's nervous to do the full in. She's got some anxiety about it. So she decides to do double double. She does her first double double and over rotates pretty badly. So she does another one and takes like two steps out of it because she's so powerful. But she feels good. That's what I'm going to do in the meet. She goes to the floor, front full through to the double outs. Great. She does the double double, not her normal confident self, but she does it and it's fine. Then she does her triple twisting double and it was a little short. And I've never seen her be really short on that before, but she does it and she feels like, okay, you know, she's feeling good. And we go to vault. And, you know, she does the Aminar. So it's a Yurchenko with a 2.5 twist, right? I have a picture on my phone, Nicole, of, I decided I wanted to try to get some pictures of the athletes interacting with their coaches because they never get pictures of them. They always get pictures of their athletes, but they never get to see them with their athletes. So I'm taking some quick photos of them interacting with their athletes. And I have the photo of Simone's last Aminar. She lands, she looks at Laurent, she's got this big smile on her face. They're both smiling because she rocked it. And I now have to leave and go into the stands because I don't have a pass to be on the floor. The coaches now at that point take over and I'm going to sit in the audience with Annie and everybody else and watch it just like you watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's smiling. So between when that happened and she goes out, there's probably 15 minutes because they got to go line up and then they march out and Russia goes first and then we're second. So anyway, 15 minutes go by. I don't know what happened in the 15 minutes because she bailed out in the one touch and only did a 1.5. We'd never seen that before. There's no indication she had any issues at all on the vault. Zero indication of that. And we're sitting far enough away. They made us in Tokyo. They made all the athletes to sit like basically in the end zone and the vault's at the other end. So we weren't allowed to move around the arena to be close. So we're trying to communicate to the coaches, to Cecile through our, Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you can't have your phone on the floor, right?
Oh my gosh.
So yeah. I watched her bail out of, and I thought either that was a bad 2.5 or she did a 1.5 and I've never seen that before. So anyway, it's her turn to compete and she does the 1.5. Right. And I'm like, oh my. And we don't, you know, we're kind of waiting to see what, wow. And she starts to put her grips on, but then we get Annie gets a text from Cecile saying she's out. we're like, is she hurt? You know, like we don't know what's going on.
Wow.
And then she said, you know, she's not competing. She can't go on. And between telling us that, we then had to figure out, okay, we have to replace her now with the alternates, but we have to let the computer people know. So how do we do that? We'd never had this situation before. And so we texted one of the FIG officials because we have his cell phone, mm-hmm. explained what's going on. Anyway, by God's grace, the beam judges took too long and they were taking so long, it allowed us for Simone to go get evaluated by the medical staff, for them to turn it in, whatever. But Annie and I did not know that it actually worked. All in all, probably took 4 to 5 minutes was all. And then America has to be up first for bars, which was, I thought, we're not going to make it. You know, we're not going to get this done in time. And so if they flash Simone's name up there and Jordan's on the stand, we get a zero.
Ah.
And we will end up with no medal whatsoever.
Right.
And so, you know, they warmed up great. And Jordan rose to the occasion. It's her turn to compete. And we're waiting to see. And sure enough, her name comes up. So we're like, we dodged that bullet. So then the meet got very, very exciting. And it was just so fun to see the girls pull together and fight as hard as they did. That was really an incredible Olympic moment. And it was so great. But to Simone's credit, had she decided, well, I'm going to tough it out. You know, I'm going to hang in there. And if she'd have bailed out on bars, we'd have had to eat that score and we would have had no medal whatsoever. So she had the courage to take herself out of something that she'd been training for since 2016. And I can't imagine what was going through her mind, but to her credit, she did the right thing because, you know, as you know, the twisties, that takes months to fix.
Oh,
you don't fix it by just trying harder, right? It is a mental performance block that for some reason just prohibits you from doing something that you really know how to do. And I got it. In college, I learned a triple full. And after that, for a little while, I couldn't do anything but a triple full. And when I didn't want to do a triple full, and I would crash. So I had to stop and start over.
I couldn't go forward past vertical without twisting. Couldn't even do a front handspring vault without twisting out of it. And so, yeah, it's real and it's frustrating and you don't choose it.
And you don't know why. You know, there's no reason except, but it does anyway. So credit to Simone that she had the courage and she, you know, I'm assuming that she knew that she was in an environment both within the U.S., you know, our national team environment and her own personal coaches that she would not be forced to do it. So, you know, that's a credit to the change of the culture, I believe, and a credit to her to have the courage to do that because, and honestly, it was good for the athletes in the sense that now the world got to meet Grace and Jordan and Suni. And whenever Simone is in the meet, because she's the greatest, the media only wants to talk with her. And honestly, she gets frustrated with it too. I mean, she really would like for her teammates to get more recognition. And in this case, they got to. So that part was really great.
Yep. And she was right back out there cheering them on, which was
right away. Yeah. She showed great leadership.
That's a champion right there. Yeah. I think I've seen Simone putting on her grips and missing other people's routines more times than I can count. So
it's and that's silly. That's so ridiculous. I mean, I've told the people at NBC, if you did this in football and we had to watch Tom Brady go sit and just look at the iPad while the game is going on, you would lose viewers and you'd be done. You would never do that in sport. So why we do that in our sport, it's just ridiculous.
All right. Are you ready to get into a couple videos here?
Yeah.
All right.
Is that Donnie? I can't tell.
It's going to be, yeah.
This is USA Romania. Oh, I love this. I love this. You know, she was not scheduled to do beam.
Oh, really?
No. She was not. What happened just before this, Christy Powell jammed her knee. She straight-legged her landing on bars and hurt her back or whatever. And we had to pull her out of the meet. And so we went to Donnie and said, Donnie, you're up. You're up on beam. And so Donnie started this meet, was going to be a specialist on bars. And I think maybe floor. I can't remember. But and then she came and did this and just rocked it. Yeah, this was awesome. I remember it. And just, I was so proud of her. And right after this in 95, we had, you know, she made the world championship team. And my goal was for her to prove how consistent she was. So I wanted her to go up first on every event because I knew she would hit and she always did. And therefore, it would just give more credibility to her being on the Olympic team to be that start-off person, which ended up being J.C. Phelps. But, man, that was – Donnie was really under pressure, man. She was – you could cash that check, man. It was amazing.
Yeah, she was great. The other thing I wanted to ask you about this is how do you feel about that jacket?
Well, I know I don't have it anymore.
You don't wear that out?
I did not keep that out. No.
Mm. There were some poor fashion choices. I know you had the choice of the jacket.
Very patriotic, but no, that's not a jacket. I did not keep that one, no.
So the other thing that I loved about this video is that they called you not once, but I think three times, Tom Foster and then the Fosters, Tom and Lori Foster. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, come on, guys. Come on.
The Fosters. Wow.
So that is a very different time. And
yeah,
you were painted as the nice guy amongst a field of maybe not so. And that's shown in NBC fluff pieces. And that was actually shown at the beginning of another clip that I have on here. It's close-ups of you in slow motion. And just as, can this nice guy do what Bella can do and this and that. Did you know that was the perception then? And
yeah.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we were criticized for it by some of the staff at the time that, you know, we're too nice. You can't be that nice and have kids, win medals. And our kids didn't win individual medals. So maybe they were right. I don't know, but it didn't matter. That's how we were as coaches. And we coached every athlete the way we would want our daughter coached. Mm-hmm. And that's the bottom line. How do I want my daughter treated? And that's how I'm going to treat an athlete. But it's funny being in the role that I'm in now. I've been able to see all these athletes from around the world, different countries, all these athletes. So case in point, the last Worlds that we just came through from Japan, Kitty Kyushu. Mm-hmm. And Leanne Wong and Kayla DiCello made beam finals, and they did uncharacteristically poorly. They did not train that way. They trained so great. And we saw them in two competitions on beam where they did great, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, on the day of the beam finals, we were the only two in the morning that came to the workout, and they just did light stuff. They each did a routine. They looked good. And a girl from Germany, Paulina Pauline Schaefer comes in, and I get to meet her. She's like 26 years old, mm-hmm. 26, right? And she gets on beam and she's sharing beam with us. She doesn't do one acrobatic skill. She does basically kind of a walkthrough dance thing, and then she leaves. We're busting out a few routines. The Chinese girl there, we stopped counting routines at 8.
Oh, wow.
That's the morning. We stopped at 8. So the afternoon comes, and in beam finals, you can kind of show up when you want, do what you want, right? Because you get to be out there on the podium and so forth. So we're there, and our girls do just like a routine and then some parts. That's all. So they're ready to go. Pauline, same thing. Not an acro skill.
Wow.
And just does her thing. Like, I'm like, wow, okay. I don't give her much hope. And the Chinese girl, more routine, 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 routine. So it comes into finals. Rebecca Andrade, silver medalist, falls. Melnikova falls. The Chinese girl, all that training, falls. Guess who hits? Pauline. Great routine, yep. Beautiful, yep. Silver medal. So I guess, it just reinforces to me what coaches sometimes can't embrace is every athlete needs something different.
Exactly.
And just because you're putting in all these routines does not guarantee they will be successful. It does not guarantee it. And if you're doing it because it makes you feel comfortable, that may not be what your athlete needs. And so having that kind of wisdom is hard to find, actually. Yeah. So what they do is I find coaches are very superstitious, and they believe, well, we have to do this in order to be successful. Yeah, yep. We only do that. We yep. only do that. We never do anything different. I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, I've been watching now at the last three world championships and Olympic Games, and I can tell you there's a wide gamut of training styles, and yep. there's not one yet that's proven to be the perfect answer because they're individual people.
Yep.
Oh, I think I got that. Off subject. I forgot even what the question was.
I love that you said that, though, and I want to share something with you. So when I used to coach, I ran a JO program out in Southern California for quite a while, and I had this strategy. And now when I do staff consultations, I have this, and I have a presentation called Best Meet Ever. And it's basically how to strategize each competition so that you're peaking at the second to last competition. Because you don't want to peak at that last one. You want to peak at the second to last one, right? Level 10, peak at regionals, not nationals. You got to get there. So I take them through this journey of applying, defining success at every competition. And then I tell them as you're gaining momentum and the pressure's building, take this one meet that's in a podunk gym with judges they don't know at the height of their season when everybody's all intense and thinking that they've figured out what works, and just change your approach as a coach. Not the kids, they do what they do, but change your approach. So things like before balance beam, I always put my hands on their shoulders like this, and I say three key words, and then I turn them around and I give them a little tap, and then I stand over here. That's been working, so that's what I'm gonna do. Well, what if before Emma goes, I just look at her and I go, see you on the other side, and walk away? How do I know that that isn't the exact thing that she needs? Because I was too scared to do it before. So I like them to have this meet that doesn't really count for anything so that they can have the freedom to try different approaches. And it's for the coaches to get out of their own heads too. Mm, like you said, this is what I've always done. So this is what it works. Yeah, it works, but it could work better if you were brave enough to try a different way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I remember as an athlete, one of the very best meets I had the flu. I had the flu, and so I just couldn't warm up the way I needed to warm up, and I had the best meet ever. And I just wasn't distracted with what might happen, because I really thought, I'm not going to do very well.
Yeah.
And I ended up making finals in four events. I mean, it was just, oh my gosh. It was a great lesson to me, is that's not how you would suggest to an athlete to go prepare for this competition, right? Mm-hmm. But it worked. And you just, what you think you know, you may not know, is what I'm saying, as for coaches out there. Be open to change. And to me, Nicole, I call it the art of coaching. There is an art to coaching that you cannot teach. And I think I have that. I have the art of reading people and the art of seeing things. But in this case, in this role, I'm not responsible for any of these athletes. Their personal coaches are responsible. And many, many of them have the art of coaching. I mean, they're very, very, very good. So it's really fun to learn from them and to watch. And I look forward to the day when I can start teaching more and sharing more of the things that I've learned from some of the best in the world. So that'll be fun to do. But there's an art to it that you know, it's like I explained to the athletes before, you know, there's a thing called experience, and it takes time. There's no shortcut to experience. Mm-hmm. So you have to go through these things, and sometimes making mistakes is the best learning.
Yep.
Because then you know what not to do the next time.
Exactly.
But no one wants to fail. I get it. But a failure is, and my wife shared with me this phrase that she heard somewhere, is you forget the mistake, but remember the lesson, mm-hmm. right? Don't let it dwell. And that's one of the things, and I love professional football, I like watching it, but it always impresses me when these athletes can go out, they throw a couple of interceptions, and they come out the next set of downs, and they're still throwing. I mean, they don't let it get to them. And we have some athletes that do the same. You know, Suni Lee, for example, here's another Olympic story. This is kind of funny. So we're in the back gym, and Suni, as you know, has a 6'8" start value. She hits all her connections.
Right.
But for her to hit all her connections, she is like fingertipping releases to be in the exact position to swing to the next element. So I tell Jess, I'm like, you know, she doesn't have to do the 6'8" start routine. We just needed to go hit the routine. He's like, I know. I tell her all the time, but that's all she wants to do. I'm like, Jess, we just need her to hit her routine. And he goes, I know. That's what I tell her. So, of course, the thing goes, Simone's not in the meet now. And clearly we can't have another fall, right? And what does she do? The best bar routine. And
yeah.
Fingertipped every release move, 6'8", got the highest score of the entire competition on that routine. And honestly, we exploded in, and cheering. And oh my gosh, it was the most amazing thing. And that's one of the reasons why I feel, you know, they went to Beam with all sorts of confidence because SUNY just lit it on fire, man. That was so, so cool. But it's so funny because that's, she's a competitor and that's all she wants to do.
She really is. And that was, that was her time to shine. And man, talk about pressure. It's already pressure. It's a freaking Olympics.
I know.
That was the team that needed to be there when that happened.
Yeah.
And they showed up. All right. So I've just got one more.
Okay.
And I kind of touched upon this a little while ago. So this is you giving a physics lesson.
Some lecture. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking at this and this is what prompted the question earlier. I mean, this really is a physics lesson that you did here. And it's so interesting to watch because you know that material so well. You're talking about it the way that you would say, oh, and the wall is brown and the ceiling's white, right? Right? Everybody sees that? It's so interesting. And again, that's what prompted me to ask you that in the role that you have. Do you feel like there's this wealth of knowledge that's just sitting there that you kind of have to put on the back burner to put on this other hat of high performance coordinator?
Yes. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think, you know, what my strongest suit is teaching. I do think I'm a positive leader. I think that's one of the reasons why they asked me to apply as of the people that they knew. You know, they've experienced me through the development camps when I helped them with uneven bars. And I think, I don't know, just my personality. I think people feel, what I've been told is they feel like I'm trustworthy. I say what I'm going to do. You know, if I say it, I'm going to do it. I'm calm. I hear that a lot. You know, people say that I'm calm under pressure. And I can lead for sure. And I do like leading, but my favorite thing is teaching. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a degree in physics, but you know, the basic laws of motion are not that complicated. That's what we're dealing with as coaches. We're dealing with laws of motion. And I really like trying to teach it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I have a good relationship with my past athletes, you know, Donnie Thompson, Teresa Kulikowski, Christy Powell, who are all still friends, Kim Young, Missy Leopoldis, Natalie Foley, a few that I would talk to them, right? And I would try to teach them, why am I telling you to do this? I wanted them to understand why this correction would help them, not just do it because I said it.
Yeah.
And so they're, you know, I think they really felt like, you know, I tried to teach them things and life things, not just do it because I said it. So it was, we tried to create as much as we could with teenagers, a collaborative spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's hard to do with teenage girls. So
good job. It is. It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. But luckily they let me and they were good. Yeah.
And as you know, obviously I've talked to Teresa. So her perspective on her experience definitely matches that.
So I want to ask you about something though.
Oh, yes. Let's hear it.
So I'm going to explain Donatella, who leads the, you know, tech committee for FIG, for our sport, right? The Olympic level and everything down. You know, there's a big push to artistry. She's been very vocal about the sports being too acrobatic and needs to be more artistic. And so the definition is, well, what is artistic? And I did ask her, I said, well, if you like Van Gogh and I like Monet, who's right? I mean, who gets to decide what is artistry? And I looked at your website and you promote artistry. How do you determine what is artistic and what isn't? And so, how do you, as a judge, define that that's artistry?
So the judging part, I can't tell you how many times I have this conversation, whether it's in workshops or doing things like this. But what I like people to understand is that when we get the question, what kinds of routines do judges like? And the answer is, we like great routines. We like artistic routines. And they want to know, well, what style is going to score best? I equate it to a food critic. A food critic's job is to go try all these different restaurants and all these different types of food and then evaluate it and give a judgment based on what they thought. And there could be a food critic out there that's not a huge seafood fan, but they still need to recognize a great salmon dish. And so for judging, the things that we're looking for are attention to detail. Does every part of the body have a place to be at all times? Is there intention in every movement? Are you putting on a show? That is the best explanation I've been able to give. Are you putting on a show? And when you're putting on a show, you're not looking at the ground in your own bubble. You're putting on a show to those around you. When that routine is over, could I describe it to somebody? Not, oh, it was nice. Oh, it was clean. It was pretty. Can I describe what just happened? And I tell kids, you don't have to go do a ballet routine if that's not you. You don't need to go smile. We don't need a big cheesy smile in our face. And actually, it's a little creepy if it's not authentic. So we don't need to do that either. But something that is true to you needs to be identified, and then you crank it up to 1,000. If you want to do a dark routine, do a dark routine, but it's got to be really dark. You want to do a weird routine, make it weird. Make it really weird, though.
Yeah.
If you are a happy-go-lucky person, then make it a happy-go-lucky routine. But every part of your body needs to be committed to that style, including your head, because believe it or not, we don't just have arms. We have a head and a torso and leg and feet to deal with. So putting on a show, every part of the body engaged and involved, and having some sort of style that we can recognize, it does not have to be the style that we like. And because it's gymnastics and not even, I mean, dance is the same way. You really can't do all of that and accomplish all of that if you're sloppy. Yeah. So then we have to start looking at the other non-value part deductions, which is footwork, posture, and flexibility. Do your feet point every time they leave the floor and come back? If they're flat, are they turned out? Are you using definite posture? Even if you're supposed to be rounded, is it definite? Can I identify what that is?
Yeah.
Are you displaying a great flexibility, or are you at least hiding lack of flexibility? So those things come into play too, because that's kind of the package that the artistry is wrapped in.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, in this one lecture thing I got to participate in with Donatella and a whole bunch of judges and Canada, it had, right after the Caitlin Ohashi 10-0 routine went viral, right? Mm-hmm. And so Donatella brings up that routine and how fun and artistic it was. So I raised my hand and I said, did you know that in the NCAA, there's no requirements for them to stand on one leg before a tumbling pass? There aren't any requirements. And then she was making comments that down in the gym at the time was like a level 9 session going on. And she had made the comment that some of those routines down there are more artistic than the routines we're seeing at the international level. And I raised my hand again. I said, but they don't have anything that tells them that they have to stand on one foot or they have to have their back to this. There's anything that does that. So the more rules you impose, the less creative we will be, because we have to fit these rules. And all the things you described is exactly artistry, but you don't need rules to determine that. So why it is somebody has to stand on one leg in 2 passes before they go and try to do a double twisting double. I mean, it's like, really? So I'm a little frustrated with the direction that our sport's gone. And I just watched men's gymnastics at the World Championships as well. They're equally just as, I mean, if you watch high bar, it's like a compulsory routine. They're all doing the same thing. And what Fig doesn't realize, these people who are directing our sport, is a coach's job is to help their athlete get the highest difficulty that they can with the least amount of pain and suffering and the least opportunity for deductions. That's our goal as coaches. And what happens is you tend to find out, well, what are the skills that make that happen? And everybody finds them and we all start doing the same thing. And then the judging community complains. Everybody's doing the same thing. Well, there's no D element on bars, on girls' bars, by example. There's not one D element on the uneven bars that can take you from the low bar to the high bar if you're facing the high bar. Mm-hmm. There isn't one, which means, okay, then if I'm in the low bar, I got to keep my back to the high bar so I can do a D element to get back up there, because I got to do 8 tricks and I got to get bonus.
Right.
And right.
Yep.
So the rules themselves kind of squish our sport into areas where we can't be as creative as I would really like us to be. Mm-hmm. And that part's a frustration, but I don't see that changing, sadly. But, and because they have 0 coaches, by the way, on committees. No coaches. It's all past judges.
So no coaches actually explaining why these rules aren't. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, there's more than this one kid, but for instance, there was a kid at Hawaiian Island Twisters a few years ago. Joe posted a video of her doing it. Can't for the life of me think of what it's called now, but basically you swing forward in regular grip, but then do a front flip and catch in the back. It says, and it's so amazing, but she can't use it. There's nothing she can do.
Can't do anything out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can see that. I think with floor, I mean, what I was understanding was that the whole standing on one foot thing, blah, no foot movements on beam, no breathing, no thinking, is to try to emulate what's happening in Cirque du Soleil with the seamless transit, but we're not Cirque du Soleil. So we don't, but I'm sure we can pull certain things. But my perception is that, especially for floor, you know, the rules are set and everybody goes, oh gosh, this new code. And then they master it. And then the powers that be say, oh, everybody can do that now. Oh, it's too easy. Okay. Now you have to. So I think what's going to happen next is that you have to dance into the corner, close your eyes, hold your breath. And then where else
are you being? Are you being sarcastic? Is that going to pass? Is that going to fly?
A little. I mean, I'm kind of wondering. Where else? Yeah. Where else? Just let them think and breathe and do amazing things. It didn't add to. I'm not more impressed seeing.
I'm not either.
Five
I'm not
either.
And I watch beam routines now that from the 90s, and I'm like, they're not different. People aren't doing harder things. It's not more creative now than it used to be. Bars is. Bars is cool. I mean, I think bars are really fun.
Where the hell can bars go? Do you think the equipment needs to change? Have we maxed out what a bar routine can be with this equipment that we have?
Well, they are going to raise. Did you know they're raising the bars one? Mm-hmm. We're going up a little bit. So they're raising it up one notch. But they're not doing that to promote the sport. They're doing it so that the equipment people don't have to raise it for Nina Durwal, tall people.
Yeah.
That's why they're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why they're doing it. But I don't know. I mean, it could change if they would change the value of certain things. We would see some more creativity. Yeah. But I got a couple of new elements that I'm trying to get coaches to work on.
Is it a secret or are you going to
really
tell us?
Cool. No, they're secret.
Okay.
They're secret. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I have a skill in the code of points, Tom.
I saw that.
Did you see what it was?
And well, the switch wolf, but what was it?
Here's the deal though. Okay. There's a caveat to that. I did the switch wolf and it was a 120 degree minimum leap that then switched. It is not the hitch kick wolf dump thing that you see now. It was actually supposed to be an even split that then switches into it. And so that was valued as a C on beam. I did it at JO Nationals, got it named after me. The Russians did it in the following Olympics, which was
incredible. Fun.
That was probably one of the highlights of my life, was seeing that. And then it turned into this hitch kick horrifying variation. And now, yeah, it's not pretty.
Yeah.
So I don't really brag about it too much, but because you have to explain, it really was a little more impressive than what we're seeing. But and my name's not on it anymore. So I have to call somebody about that. Yeah.
That's a bummer.
It is. All right. Well, is there anything that we did not touch upon that you were hoping that we would?
I agonize over every selection that's coming up because it's an incredibly important and difficult decision to try to balance keeping the integrity of the sport and trying to help America win medals. And that's one thing that, the athletes, no one wants to work this hard and not win medals. And I know the athletes and said, USA Gymnastics only cares about medals. So do the athletes. I've not heard one of these athletes yet that goes, I just want to go and visit Japan because I've never been there. Never heard one say that to the world. They want to go and they want to win. They're athletes. They want to win. And the key is that we got to create an environment, which I've tried to do, where they feel valued if they don't win.
Right. That's
right?
Huge.
They got to feel valued no matter what happens. And they don't. And I've tried and tried, but what I've discovered is every athlete that doesn't reach her goal they walk away disappointed no matter what. Now, they may change their mind later and when they can reflect on it, when they get further away from it. But the athletes that didn't make the Olympics now, they're still, no matter what the environment was, they're still in pain. And there's no environment that's going to change that level of disappointment when you don't achieve a goal that you really, really wanted. And that's just the reality of things.
Well, hopefully there are healthy human beings that are also being cultivated as their gymnastics is cultivated that will go out into the world and be able to look back and not feel bad, you know?
Yeah, I hope so. But it is, it is definitely a challenge to get people to really celebrate. You know, I'll tell you one thing. When Lori and I, we ended up, Christy Powell, we had her, she won the American Cup in 1995. Mm-hmm. 95, yeah. And it was in Seattle. And the very next day we had to fly with the team to Argentina for the Pan American Games. But, that's quite an accomplishment. And we knew going in, by the way, we got in because Dominique Dawes pulled out. She had an injury or something like that. So that put Christy in as an alternate, right? And I knew then that she was training so well. And I remember specifically telling Christy, if Shannon Miller falls, you're going to win this meet. Wow. And in the prelims, Shannon fell on the beam. And Christy and I looked at each other. And sure enough, she ends up winning the meet. So anyway, when it's all done, Steve Nuno, he came to me and he said, Tom, you got to celebrate. You got to celebrate these because it didn't matter that the field wasn't super strong or you won because Shannon fell. You celebrate because these things happen few and far between. So I really appreciated his view of that. You know, he could have easily or had the view, she only won because Chris, he didn't have that at all. And it was a great lesson to me to also share with my coaches, celebrate the wins, no matter what they are, because they are hard to get no matter what.
Yep. And that's the journey, right? That's celebrating the journey.
Yes.
Instead of the end destination. Yeah. The journey's 99% of what you're doing anyway. So.
Well, and again, I've asked athletes, and I started in 2018. I said, of all the Olympians that I know, and I've had all these discussions, not one of them says, oh, I remember when I won this medal. Not one talks about a medal, but they do reflect on the relationships that they made and the experiences that they had. That they talk about. That is what you're going to remember. So how you treat one another will be way more impactful to you than any medals that you win, for sure. And so we got to be more attentive as to how do we treat one another? How are we treating each other? Because I want these people to walk away and someday want to give back. That's what I want.
So is there going to be a round two?
Maybe.
Okay. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that. All right. Well, thank you so much. Again, I appreciate you trusting me with your insight and your perspective. And I know it's probably been a long time coming. So I hope that it felt good to be able to provide some context. And that's one of my big goals here. So
yeah, it did. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And my final question I ask all my guests is, when I say the word joy, what does that make you think?
Joy. A wide variety of things, actually. I don't have one thing come to my mind. Family, experiences that we've had together as family, fly fishing. But I guess if I were to put it in one word, it would be the word peace. Having peace in your life just helps me have joy and experience things with joy, joyful attitudes and so forth. So the reduction of anxiety and stress helps more joy. Hey, who's that? Who's that guy?
Say, this is my joy right here.
There you go.
You want to say hi? Hi. This is Bonham. Hold on. I'll let him come here.
Bonham, you're on TV.
Hold on. I'll go ahead.
How old are you?
I am 6 years old.
Six. Are you in kindergarten or first grade? What are you doing?
I'm in first grade.
Very good. Very good.
So this is Mr. Tom. And I told you a little bit about him this morning. You want to tell him anything before you go?
I like your shirt.
Thank you. Right. It's my casual Friday shirt.
That was amazing. You know what, bud? I've spent a month and a half preparing for this interview, and I think you just showed me up. So good job. All right. Well, thank you again. And
thanks, Nicole.
I hope to talk to you again soon. Reach out if you'd like to do it again.
Okay. Well, thank you. All right.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's going to be it for today. I want to thank Tom for taking the time to talk. I also want to thank you all for taking the time to listen. Remember, you can find single conversations from past episodes on the YouTube playlist Gymnastics Conversations, and you can find the link in the show notes. I invite you to go back and listen to past episodes, and you'll be able to see both the evolution of our audio equipment and the show's format in general. Stay tuned next week for a fun time with John Roethlisberger, followed by Ariana Berlin and Hody Gabishian. If you want to hear more content and see more content, make sure to follow me at Nicole Langevin Consultant on Facebook and Instagram. And last, but certainly not least, if you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to this show. I feel like I said that the wrong order, but you know, do the three things, because although you hear it a lot, because it makes a huge difference. So I would really appreciate if you'd take a minute to do those in any order that you want. And until next week, keep thinking outside the box.